In the regular countdown, this swing arm goes back beyond this park position several more meters. It is not retracted fully until the rocket actually lifts off the pad. The swing arm is brought back to what is called a park position, right down to just a few moments before the liftoff. And then it can be brought in a hurry should that need arise. As the countdown approaches zero, it gets farther and farther away. It, actually, 43 minutes before liftoff, it's retracted to what's called the standby position, this 12-degree position which you heard Chuck Hollingshead described.
Apollo Saturn launch control, the swing arm number 9 is now back to that retract position at the 12-degree position. Point out that the window we have tonight extends to 1:31 a.m. So we have some time here to assess the problem and then continue our countdown. We're continuing to hold at the 30-second mark at this time. T-minus 30 seconds and holding. This is Kennedy, launch control.
I'll give you that sequence on that retracted arm again from the beginning. At T-minus 43 minutes, it retracts from right up beside the spacecraft, actually touching there, back 12 degrees. It moves back about 5 meters. Then at 5 minutes before liftoff, it's fully retracted, but it can be brought in quickly should the need arise. Just checking some data there quickly. Thank you, Don, for grabbing that for me. Now, that the engineers in the flight control are still watching, still analyzing, and they have the capacity with a giant computerized network there in the flight control to make minute analysis, because data has been recorded throughout the countdown, and they have the ability to recover data and to run it through great computers and get very quick analyses. I would guess at this point that they are verifying what must have caused the shutdown. At only 30 seconds until liftoff, the monitoring is so minute, is so complete, that there would seem to be little doubt that the instrumentation would have zeroed right in on what caused the shutdown. It has not been announced to us here. You will hear it as soon as we do from launch control. As I say, you're listening to the Voice of America worldwide, the liftoff of Apollo 17. It's been delayed. It was scheduled to lift off at 53 minutes past the hour, some 15 or 16 minutes ago. We're now that much late. We're now about 16 minutes past the scheduled liftoff time because an automatic sequencer shut down the launch mechanism at T-minus 30 seconds. T-minus 30 seconds. Spacecraft went on internal power. The launch vehicle went on internal power at 50 seconds. Ignition was scheduled to start at about between 8 and 9 seconds. That's when we would have seen flame shoot out. It didn't get that far, but it was after the launch vehicle transferred to internal power. That doesn't give us the right to speculate that there was an internal power problem that developed in that 20 seconds after it was actuated. However, the telemetry, the data going through the launch complex through these computers is so minute that we have little doubt that the engineers in flight control are able to have get a handle on it very, very fast. It hasn't been announced to us here at the press site. You hear it just as soon as we do through Chuck Hollingshead in flight control. Something like 1 o'clock in the morning, another 3 hours in the launch window. It could go any time in the next approximately 3 hours. Don Beatty?
Well, I think that'll depend on what the problem is, because
let me pose the question. Do you have any idea how long it would take? How far back you'd have to recycle?
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say, Red. I think it will depend on what the problem is as to where they have to recycle the count.
Mm-hmm. There's no way of knowing how far back they would have to go at this point until we find out just what went wrong. Just what stopped the automatic sequencer. The astronauts have gone through their procedures of safely turning off all of the explosive devices that would have been used in the abort system aboard the command module, America. So they are waiting patiently atop this big rocket over 100 meters up in the air above the launch pad. There's a red beacon on top of the launch support tower there, flashing. That's an aircraft warning beacon, incidentally, to keep planes from flying too close. Of course, during launches, the Federal Aviation Agency makes every attempt to make sure that no aircraft are in the vicinity. This is called a restricted zone at all times anyway, and civilian pilots are not supposed to fly any closer than about 8 kilometers of the Cape Kennedy complex. This is Rhett Turner at the launch site at Cape Kennedy. We'll report more to you shortly. Let's go back now to our Washington studio.
You're listening to the Voice of America's coverage of Apollo 17. We'll return to Rhett Turner at Cape Kennedy following a summary of late news.
The countdown on the launching of the Apollo 17 moon mission was halted 30 seconds before liftoff. The launching was cut off automatically, and the cause was not immediately known. The condition of former U.S. President Harry Truman has become critical. He is being treated in a Kansas City, Missouri hospital for lung congestion and a weakened heart. Mr. Truman, who is 88, has been receiving inhalation treatments and mild sedatives. His doctors are concerned over an irregular heartbeat that has not stabilized. Mr. Truman was treated at his home for 2 weeks before his condition warranted hospitalization Tuesday night. The United States, Britain, France, and West Germany are reported to have reached an understanding on future contacts with East Germany. The subject was discussed at a dinner in Brussels by Secretary of State Rogers and his British, French, and West German counterparts on the eve of the NATO Council meeting. U.S. sources said the consensus is that between the dates of the signing and the ratification of the inter-German treaty, the four Western countries will each decide at what pace and at what level to open contacts with East Germany. 18 non-aligned countries have introduced a draft resolution calling on United Nations members to cut off aid to Israel unless Israel pledges to withdraw from occupied territory. The delegate of Senegal, speaking for the 18 nations, formally proposed the resolution as the UN General Assembly continued debating the Mideast question. On Tuesday, Israel warned that passage of the resolution may jeopardize Mideast peace efforts. The top American and North Vietnamese negotiators have met privately for more than 5.5 hours in Paris and have agreed to meet again Thursday on a Vietnam peace agreement. Presidential advisor Kissinger, Hanoi's Lê Duc Tho, and their top aides at one point interrupted the long session for a brief stroll in the garden of the mansion where the talks took place. As usual, there were no details on the discussions. The White House says King Hussein of Jordan is expected to visit the United States in the near future. A White House spokesman said President Nixon undoubtedly will meet with the Jordanian leader during the visit. In a recent interview with the Lebanese newspaper Usba al Arabi, King Hussein said his visit will take place early next year. Syrian Defense Minister Klass is in Moscow at the invitation of his Soviet counterpart Marshal Grechko. Reports say Soviet military aid to Syria is expected to be a major topic of the talks. Reports from Cairo say the wreckage of an Egypt Air Boeing 707, which crashed on a training flight Tuesday, has been found in a mountainous area about 70 kilometers southeast of Cairo. All 6 persons aboard were killed. The cause of the crash is still under investigation. 48 Moroccan political prisoners are in the ninth day of a hunger strike, and their attorneys say that two of the group, both Palestinian students, may have to be hospitalized soon. The prisoners have been held for over 8 months on suspicion of subversive activities, and they are protesting the delay in being brought to trial as well as conditions of their confinement. The Syrian government reports it will sell the People's Republic of China and Bulgaria 100,000 tons of phosphates each next year. The Syrian Minister of Oil, Electricity, and Mineral Resources, Ahmed Abara, says discussions are underway to sell 150,000 tons of phosphates to Romania. Soviet President Podgorny has pledged his country's support for the revolutionary programs of Chile's President Allende. In a speech welcoming President Allende to the Soviet Union, Mr. Podgorny praised Chile's fight for political and economic independence. President Allende thanked his Soviet hosts and said Chile depends heavily on support from nations that he called the pioneers of socialist construction. President Allende repeated his charge of economic aggression from foreign corporations. In Washington, the State Department denied President Allende's charge earlier this week of an economic blockade. It cited Chile's delay in paying its debts as a likely cause of reluctance by foreign investors to extend the country's further credit. President Allende is to visit Cuba and Venezuela before returning to Santiago. British State Secretary for Northern Ireland, William Whitelaw, says he is forming a special security force, rather task force, to combat the wave of terrorist killings in the province. He said the force will consist of British troops and Ulster police and will concentrate its efforts in trouble areas like Belfast. There have been more than 100 sectarian killings in the province this year, with two more reported since Tuesday. And a series of new rocket and mortar attacks has been launched against British army and police posts. A soldier who had been in Northern Ireland less than a week was killed in one of the incidents. The International Monetary Fund has approved the membership application of Romania. Romania is the first member of COMCON, the East European Trading Group, to join. A fund spokesman said in Washington that Romania's quota of the fund will be set at the equivalent of 190 million special drawing rights. The special drawing right is the reserve currency established by the fund. One special drawing right is equivalent to the pre-devaluation value of one American dollar. And President Nixon has praised the Secretary General of the United Nations for his firm stand against international terrorism. Mr. Nixon made the comment in response to a message Secretary General Waldheim sent him after his re-election. The President said he looks forward to working with the Secretary General and other world leaders to build a structure of lasting peace. Here again are the major news stories at this hour. The countdown on the launching of the Apollo 17 moon mission was halted 30 seconds before liftoff. The launching was cut off automatically, and the cause was not immediately known. Britain, France, and the United States and West Germany reportedly agree on timing of contacts with East Germany. And a draft resolution has been introduced calling on United Nations members to cut off aid to Israel unless it pledged to withdraw from occupied Arab territory. That's the news. Kay Gallant reporting.
This is the Voice of America's coverage of the Apollo 17 space mission. The spacecraft is in a hold condition at Cape Kennedy following a cutoff by the automatic terminal sequencer just 30 seconds before liftoff. The astronauts are safing systems while engineers check for problems. For late developments, we return to Cape Kennedy and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner.
Well, we've gotten the explanation of what happened, and it will be about 1 hour from now before we will lift off. We don't know exactly what time the liftoff will now be scheduled. It takes about another 30 minutes to correct the problem and to arrange for the countdown to go back to T-minus 22 and then count back down to zero again. So it'll be at about 50 to 55 minutes at least from now before we will have a liftoff. Now, as to what did occur, the automatic sequencer, the automatic control, was in operation. The automatic sequencer was supposed to pressurize all of the large fuel tanks fully just a few seconds before launch. The third stage LOX tank, that's the liquid oxygen tank in the third stage, the S4B stage of the Saturn V rocket, was not pressurizing fast enough according to the way the automatic sequencer was feeding information to it. So the flight controllers saw this pressurization going slowly. They punched on a manual pressurization to make sure the pressure built up properly. It did so. But it didn't do this fast enough to satisfy the automatic monitoring system. So the automatic monitoring system, the terminal sequencer, monitoring mechanism, shut down the whole count at T-minus 30 seconds. Now, they've completely analyzed it, and they're going back and regearing for the count again. This has to be done. The count has to be backed up in order to go through all of this minute, meticulous monitoring again to make sure nothing goes wrong. And again, arming those pyrotechnic devices, which are very much a part of the mechanism. Now, here's the way Chuck Hollingshead in flight control explained that, which I've just explained to you a few moments ago. He said, first of all, he said that the S4B stage was not being pressurized fast enough. And then he reported,
The crew in the fire room, realizing this or seeing this happen, pressurized the tank manually, but this did not happen fast enough to satisfy the automatic sequencer. As was mentioned earlier, during this sequence, everything must happen at a certain time before the next step in the sequence can take place. The next step that was to take place was the retraction of swing arm 9, and at the time that was to take place, the terminal sequencer had not had an indication that the third stage lock tanks had been pressurized. The plan now is to recycle to the T-minus 22-minute mark in the countdown. Now, this recycling procedure will take an additional 35 to 40 minutes. This still puts us well within our launch window. While we're recycling, we'll continue to review the data to determine just what the problem is and whether or not we can proceed from the T-minus 22-minute mark for a launch later in the window. The crew aboard the spacecraft has been alerted to the problem and understand what is happening. They're standing by there at this time. Now, T-minus 30 seconds and holding. This is Kennedy, Launch Control.
That's the way we got the word from Launch Control from Chuck Hollingshead. And they are now in the process of going through this 30 to 40-minute preparatory exercise in getting everything cycled back to T-minus 22. Here's Launch Control again live.
We stand by here at the T-minus 30-second mark in the countdown. Crew remaining perfectly calm in their spacecraft. They've gone through their safing checks. The various safing checks of the launch vehicle have been completed. We're now going through preparations for recycling to the T-minus 22-minute mark. Standing by at this time at T-minus 30 seconds. T-minus 30 seconds and holding in the countdown for Apollo 17. This is Kennedy, Launch Control.
Well, Don Beatty, what we've really seen is how thorough preparations are and how the extent to which a mission launch goes to achieve the greatest safety. I think that's what we're learning in this sort of thing.
That's right, Rhett. I don't believe we've ever seen this kind of problem exactly like this on a real live launch before, but this is the sort of thing.
I think we saw it on in Gemini when Wally Schirra's Titan got down to the zero mark and nothing happened.
Right, but the problem of the pressurization I don't know that we've seen before, but this is the kind of thing that in their long period of training prior to the launch, the crews and the crews of the firing center are practicing and simulating all the time so they know just exactly what to do when this sort of thing crops up.
We certainly heard that flight controller shout out, shut down, loud and clear throughout the firing room when it happened at T-minus 30 seconds. This was the man watching that pressurization, as it turns out.
That's right.
That's
Every man would have seen
the shutdown.
That's right. Every man in there has his own job, of course, watching his specific part of the mission.
How many are there in the launch control, approximately?
In the firing room, there are about 200 men.
200 men watching instrumented systems second by second by split second.
That's right.
And then the computers watching multiple parameters for them. You can multiply it a quantum jump by tens or hundreds at least.
Yes, the computers, of course, are monitoring many, many millions of bits of data that are coming in and then displaying the critical ones for the men that are watching the monitor.
The 200.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I hope that gives our listeners a clear idea of the complexity and the amount of monitoring that goes on in one of these things. Again, millions of bits of data coming in from the spacecraft through telemetry, through monitoring. The computer processes it and puts it on displays for 200 engineers in the launch control center. And when one is critical, it lights up a red light, and in an automatic sequence like this, it shuts down. Okay, Don, then I think we better wrap it up here temporarily. I think we have fairly well explained to our listeners what has happened. The countdown for Apollo 17 reached T-minus 30 seconds, and a pressurization system for the liquid oxygen in the third stage of the Saturn V rocket was a little bit slow to come up to the full pressure under the automatic sequencer. The engineers in flight control pressurized it manually, but this did not bring, the pressure did come up properly, but it didn't come up fast enough to satisfy the automatic monitoring system, so a shutdown was actuated by the automatic control at 30 seconds before liftoff. And now the engineers are going through, they're about 10 to 15 minutes into a 30 or 40 minute preparatory procedure in putting the countdown back to T-minus 22 minutes. That means at about 10 minutes of the hour or so, we'll be at T-minus 22 and counting, possibly with a liftoff at between 10 and 15 minutes past the upcoming hour. This is Rhett Turner with Don Beatty at Cape Kennedy. We'll be reporting more to you as events warrant. Now back to Washington.
This is the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 17. As you heard, the problem is being checked. The countdown recycle set for a possible launch later in the evening. While these preparations are underway, we return to our Apollo News Center for a report on other developments in the news by Stan Busby.
You're listening to the Voice of America broadcasting from Washington. The United States, Britain, France, and West Germany have reached an understanding on future dealings with East Germany. Diane Doherty reports from Brussels.
The big four Western powers have agreed if the East-West German Treaty is signed on December 21st, they will each set their own pace for opening contacts with East Germany with the view to establishing diplomatic relations. This was revealed by U.S. sources following a meeting between Secretary of State William Rogers, British Foreign Secretary Sir Alec Douglas Hume, West German Foreign Minister Walter Scheel, and French Foreign Minister Maurice Schumann. The French Foreign Minister will present the views of the four when he addresses the Atlantic Alliance ministerial meeting here in Brussels. The United States, Britain, France, and West Germany also are said to have agreed on the wording of the German section of the NATO communique. This, of course, would have to be approved by all the alliance members, and the four countries' views on East Germany are not meant to either restrict nor unleash other NATO members in their future dealings with East Germany. U.S. sources said the four countries agreed there will be no diplomatic recognition of East Germany until after the ratification of the East-West German Treaty, which is expected in April or May. The United States, Britain, and France will be guided by the wishes of West Germany in this process. And the United States, for its part, has set no timetable for its opening of contacts with East Germany. U.S. policy is that an opening of contacts does not amount to establishing diplomatic relations. And Secretary Rogers is said to have asked that this point be made clear when Mr. Schumann makes his statement. As for West Germany's ultimate intentions toward East Germany, U.S. sources say even when the treaty is ratified, West Germany's representative in East Berlin will not be called an ambassador. Diane Doherty, Voice of America, Brussels.